The Dick Cavett Show was known as the talk show for the Woodstock generation to help chronicle those very special and very turbulent years of the 60s and early 70s. Dick has been releasing DVDs. We spoke to him a while ago. He's putting out DVDs of some of the show's most significant and entertaining segments. This week, Dick is releasing The Dick Cavett Show, John Lennon and Yoko Ono. Cavett's show was the first that Lennon appeared on after the Beatles broke up. And he enjoyed himself so much, he promised to return and play live.
Does that ever happen to you, that you find out something about the other from something you read rather than...
Oh, sure, sure. I mean, I began to suspect she chain smokes every time I kiss her, I burnt my chin. But, and then I read it in an article.
That's a wonderful delivery you've got. That's good.
Back on the board.
Dick Cavett with John and Yoko. These entire episodes are just part of his two-disc DVD. Dick Cavett, welcome back to the Bob Rivers Show. How are you, sir?
Oh, hey, Bob. I was overhearing you. I hope that isn't rude.
Not at all. Did I say anything?
Well, my lawyer will call you in the morning.
Ah.
About the mess you've made of everything.
That's it.
No, it is something very... almost mystical about this phenomenon of these DVDs of John and Yoko. People who never cared about them and barely knew who they were, if that was possible, have said, I got this for my wife because she used to watch your show all the time and thought I'd put it on for a minute and found out that the sun had come up. That they said, I couldn't stop. I watched 2 hours, and then I thought I better go to bed. So it's got an effect on people that I don't pretend to understand entirely. And it's also odd to watch yourself that many years ago and think, this guy's in trouble. Wait, this guy is me, or is I.
But I was going to ask about that. You, of course, were a brilliant interviewer at the time, of course, but you're just a guy, you're just a human being doing the best you can in every situation. I wondered, does a guy like Dick Cavett, who has talked to everyone, professionals, kings, queens, you know, gay, lesbian, king, queen, whatever, when you're talking to these people or when you're watching yourself talk to them now, were you nervous during the interviews? Were you worried about your questions and how the answers might go, just maybe the way we are?
Oh, you do worry about those things, and I don't think I was ever nervous past maybe the first half of the first year, but there would be problems that would arise and tensions and frightening things. And in the early days, you got so much in your head while you're sitting there and you think, good God, this person's lips have stopped moving and I haven't been listening at all. What did he say?
Oh, God.
Can I go to commercial? No. And finally you end up with a lame, yes, that's interesting, wondering if that even fits what they were saying. But I noticed on the days when I taped two 90-minute shows, which was always Thursday for the three-day weekend, about the last 20 minutes of the second one that you've taped with just 20 minutes between, you're gone. And I talked to Johnny about that, and he said, although he got down to an hour, I think he regretted that at the time. But he said, you get that too, Richard, that you just don't have any more gas? And yeah.
John Lennon interviewed with you, John and Yoko, and this was his first interview, this on the DVD, his first interview since the Beatles, or after the Beatles had broken up.
Right.
Now, at the time, and I don't recall the Beatles ever announcing they broke up. Had they announced
it? No, I can't really. It was sort of woozy as to what was the exact date and so on, but one of the five books that I hear coming out this year about the Beatles, maybe they will tell us. But the thing I, as John talked on that first show, I found it ironic that I too thought that Hard Day's Night was probably what their life was like. And he makes it quite clear. He says that people spent 3 days with us and made it, and then did a movie that they thought was our life. And at the time they were frolicking and flitting about in that lighthearted, really charming movie. He said all the tensions in the background were there full strength, and it had already become awful in many ways for them to be the Beatles.
Wow.
And that they were amazed at how gullible or sentimental or something enough people are to actually think, in some cases, that was a documentary of what their life was like.
Now, he had such a good time on your show, Dick. He said he was going to come back and...
John is a very glib guy and very articulate. I guess they don't have quite the same meaning. And it was easy to be on with him. They were so bloody nervous. And I probably was somewhat, too, in the first 20 minutes.
John and Yoko noticed
that they were nervous and consumed... at least a package of cigarettes between them in the first 20 minutes of the show.
I'm glad you said cigarettes.
But when the cigarettes faded, though they kept a few, that alone is shocking, by the way, on television. Now you realize how strange it is to see somebody come out and light up. But they did virtually everywhere. It was very, very pleasant to fall into what we finally, all of us, did, which was what Jack Parr said a talk show should be. He said, don't ever make it an interview, kid, he called me. Make it a conversation.
Now, he enjoyed this conversation with you so much, he said, I'll come back and play the next time, which he did.
Yeah, and he did, because so many people said, oh, why didn't you ask him to sing? And all, he wasn't prepared to. And
now, I have two questions. One, did you know what he was going to play? Because what he played was something I can't even say on the radio.
A woman is the nigger of the world.
I'll let you say it, sure.
You can handle the fines. You're a dick.
Quotes are all right. You just can't say things yourself.
Okay.
Yeah, and of course, that was the whole point of the thing, and ABC's panic went after a couple of days, because this show was not put on that night. It was held for a more advantageous date a week later or something. They apparently, someone very extraordinarily sharp at the network, saw the title of the song and thought, and hit the ceiling and made an edict that there would be no song called Woman is the Nigger of the World on ABC.
I was wondering.
They bothered a little bit to find out what it meant. But they were still scared.
Right. They still have a ton of...
They said, it's not going to go on our network. And I said, yes, it is.
Uh-huh.
You know, seeing what reaction that would get. Finally, they came up with what they thought was a brilliant idea. A little disclaimer that Dick could tape later and will insert it in front of the song. And they sent me this icky-sounding thing. And some of you might be offended and you know, and that. But we realize the meaning is not what it sounds like, perhaps, and so on and so on. We hope you'll enjoy it in an adult manner. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And about hundreds, at least, of protests came in. None of them about the song, all of them about what letter writers call the mealy-mouthed little stupid insert you made them do. As you can see from my face in the last sentence of it that I'm not on their side.
That's funny. The network censors forced you to read this thing.
Yeah, and isn't it great that the protests that they feared came in about that and called them every name in the world, and not one soul objected to the song.
We have another quote from the interview. This is Dick Cavett with John and Yoko immediately after, or pretty close to, the first interview they did after the Beatles broke up.
Anyway, she didn't split the Beatles, because how could one girl split the Beatles, or one woman? You know? The Beatles were drifting apart on their own, you know.
Can you remember when you realized that it was inevitable that you would split up?
No. It's like saying, did you remember falling in love? Not quite, no. It just sort of happens.
How long was it fun?
Everything's fun off and on, you know. Mm-hmm. So I suppose it could have gone on being fun off and on, or it could have gone worse, I don't know. It's just that when you grow up, you know, we don't want to be the crazy gang, which they might know over here, which is British, or the Marx Brothers, which is sort of being dragged on stage playing She Loves You when we've got, you know, asthma and tuberculosis, and when we're 50, you know. Here they are again, yesterday, all my love.
That is so hilarious, Dick, given that Paul McCartney, at age 63, is doing one of the most incredible rock shows you'll ever see. Have you seen it?
What was that?
Pardon me?
Oh, I'm sorry, you faded for a moment. Oh. I think it's at my end.
The quote there with John Lennon saying, I don't want to be on the stage with 50 when I have asthma.
Oh, yeah.
And yet today, Paul McCartney is doing one of the most incredible rock shows ever produced.
And as I know you recall from my Dick Cavett show, Rock Icons, backstage with Mick Jagger, I say, surely something like, you can't picture yourself doing this at 60. Well, we're in our 30s then, I guess, or something. And Mick says, you can picture it easily.
Mick knew.
And here they are.
Half time.
You're having Super to come Bowl, on stage but... with a cane, and you know, and when you're way up at 60, which as everybody knows is one of the last years of your life, usually.
That's so ironic.
You know, I can remember my father saying once, he came home furious, and he said, "You let your grandfather, a 61-year-old man, move that chair to the attic?" I guess I thought, oh, God, I guess 61 is pretty much two feet in the grave.
Yeah, Grandpa wasn't trying to impress a supermodel from Brazil, though. Mick's got motivation, you know.
It's so strange, though, and amazing to look back on that John said, 50, now I'm long gone, and yet Mick knew that at 60s, oh, of course, easily I can see myself doing it. So do we have a sense of our future, you think?
I don't know, but I know that I... Whoops, sorry. I simply dropped the phone. It's a habit I have when I'm not sure what I'm going to say next. Jagger is one of the keenest minds you're going to run across. And whenever I irritate somebody by saying, you know, he went to the London School of Economics, and they laugh and say, where did he really go? Well, he did. and that was probably looking ahead. I don't know if the Beatles had any true gift for business. I'm just reading the gigantic Beatles book, and I'm sorry if the author is listening and I can't think of his name, but it's the one with taken from a camera where they're obviously lying down and it looks like they're looking up from the floor, and it weighs 25 pounds. But he seemed to have a very practical sense about him. He said that when I first met them, almost his first words to me after I'd said, well, I'm glad you're going to do this. We were in their hotel room in New York, and they wanted to meet me once before going on. He said, well, we're doing it because you've got the only halfway intelligent show on television.
Wow.
And at first I thought it was a compliment. And then I realized I've worked all this time to have a halfway intelligent show. Can you goose that up a little, John?
Dick Cavett in Manhattan with us this morning. The Lennon Ono DVD is being released right now. The Dick Cavett Show, John Lennon and Yoko Ono. Thank you very much, Dick. Always a pleasure.
Well, I can take a hint.
We'd love to stay on with you all day, sir. Thanks.
Okay, bye.
Uh-huh. They played at a birthday party. Or bat mitzvah. Bat mitzvah. Is it bat or bot?
Bot.
Bot.
Like robot.
I understand. It's spelled B-A-T, though, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. And did you have a bat mitzvah? Or a bar mitzvah?
I had a bar mitzvah, yes.
Yeah. What do they do at yours?
Well, I had to learn Hebrew for 4 years to lead up to it, so I was petrified that I had to perform in front of all these friends and relatives.
That's the way I remember it when my friend Marshall had his. That was the big deal, is you performed.
That's right. That's right. I had to read and sing Hebrew, and for me, singing is not a pretty sight, even when I was 13.
Not the same for young Elizabeth Brooks. Her dad, who is multi-millionaire defense contractor David H. Brooks. Do you ever hear of him?
I know. I think he's the bulletproof vest guy. Isn't he the guy who makes every bulletproof vest in America?
He's the CEO of bulletproof vest manufacturer DHB Industries, David H. Brooks. He allegedly paid the following performers: Steven Tyler, 50 Cent, Tom Petty. Oh, Joe Perry was there too. Ciara, Kenny G, and Don Henley and Joe Walsh. Oh, and Stevie Nicks.
Jeez.
First off, I think there's only two artists in there for his daughter. The rest were for him.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. And daughter 50 Cent probably did it just for the free bulletproof vests. Right?
How old are you when you get your
bar mitzvah?
How old are you when you get it?
13.
Yeah, it's your ascension into adulthood.
I mean, shouldn't he have had a much different lineup, a lineup that consisted of, oh, I don't know.
The Backstreet Boys. You got your Britney Spears. You got your Ciara. You got your 50 Cent. You got your Eminem.
Chris Brown is the guy right now that my preteen niece is dying to meet.
Your dad, of course, if he's a multimillionaire, could do this. Supposedly, it cost $10 million.
That's some wedding she's going to have later on in life.
Tyler and Perry got $2 million. They had to send the DHB corporate jet to Pittsburgh to pick them up from a Saturday gig and fly them to New York. 50 Cent was only given $100,000.
A half million.
To belt out four or five ghetto jams. But he did provide one of the highlights of the evening when he changed the lyrics of In Da Club. So he changed it so it said, "Go shorty, it's your bat mitzvah. We're going to party like it's your bat mitzvah."
Oh, my God. The tape of that alone could destroy him.
Kenny G pulled down $250,000 to play some soothing jazz during pre-dinner cocktails.
He was just backdrop music for $250,000?
Yeah, he was like the background lounge music part of the deal.
That's right.
Tom Petty supposedly sang American Girl to her, and I don't know how much he got, but it was in the hundreds of thousands. And after yesterday's story about Tom Petty refusing to ever sell out or, you know, sell his music for commercial gain or take sponsorship.
No, he said he refused to sell his music to advertisers. Right. Performing for money. That's what he does.
That's true, I guess, for lots of money. I mean, I wouldn't blame him. I think the spike in the impalers, you know, bat mitzvahs. there's a premium to be made. Why don't you guys build your brand a little more here?
Yeah.
We're going to party like it's your bat mitzvah? I don't know, Joe.
The party cost $10 million. Kids got $1,000 gift bags that included digital cameras and the new video iPod. Mr. Brooks is denying that the party was quite so extravagant. He said, quote, "All the dollar figures are vastly exaggerated. This was a private event, and we do not wish to comment on the details of the party." I have no problem with this whatsoever.
You're kidding.
Not one bit.
With blowing up $10 million bucks on a party?
If you have that much money, first off, he may be screwed up, his daughter may be screwed up, I don't know.
Right.
But this party, to me, is no indication one way or the other. If you've got it and you want to spend it, it's your own business.
Die Broke? Is that fitting with your Die Broke
plan?
Well,
the Die Broke book, which was written by, I'm glad you mentioned that, Michael J. Fox's father-in-law.
Pollock.
Says that if you're going to give money to kids, do stuff for them while you're alive and you can see them appreciate it. So, sure.
And it's all relative, depending on just how rich you are. If you're literally a billionaire, to spend $10 million on a party, that would be like me buying a keg and a prime rib and inviting my family over. It's as much of an economic sacrifice for me to go out and spend $200 or $300 as it would be for this guy probably to spend $10 million.
Exactly. So I have nothing wrong with it. I don't think there's any. I know a lot of people will say it's bad, but. You know, like I said, it doesn't prove to me that he's a good father, but it doesn't in any way indicate that he's a bad father. I have seen people who are showered with lavish gifts and totally spoiled turn out great. And I have seen people who were, you know, raised with all the right lessons turn out horrible.
Yeah.
So, and I've also seen the opposite, too. I think a lot of it is the individual and how they react to circumstance.
Yeah, but how's your 13-year-old daughter going to react when, you know, here's 50 Cent and proud moment for daddy when she's freak dancing at her own bat mitzvah? She's getting her swerve on the dance floor with some little up-and-coming young Jewish man.
I don't know what you mean.
Grinding on her. I mean, you know what these kids do to that 50 Cent.
Well, they're grinding on them in the poor schools, too. It's irrelevant to the money.
But I don't pay $500,000 to my daughter get...
That's my point. The grinding is the grinding. Deal with that as a separate issue.
This is just, you know, grade A quality grinding. This
woman is going to not be easily impressed, for sure, which is sort of what you want in your daughter, right?
Yeah.
But parents are almost worse at these things, actually. I used to DJ bar and bat mitzvahs with my boyfriend at the time. And the adults are the ones that get on the dance floor and start freak dancing each other.
They can.
They can.
Yeah.
And they will.
When you have a new boyfriend, are you going to call him your boyfriend at the time for a while?
You're my boyfriend of the time.
No.
I'm going to call him nothing. I'm going to keep it hidden from you as long as I possibly can.
we're not going to know about this next one?
This is what happened with Mike, too, remember? Yeah, we get blamed.
Yeah.
Are we to blame?
You're not to blame, but, you know, I just... Seeing my past and seeing how my exes don't really appreciate being talked about, I think maybe I should be a little bit more careful in the future.
Okay. Here's another way to look at that. You should not get exes that don't appreciate being talked about. You don't want to collect more of them, and the best way to find out is to talk about them right from the get-go.
Right.
No, but they like that.
Pre-disaster them.
They all like that.
They like it in the beginning.
They don't want me to say a word after it's over.
Oh, after it's over. Yeah. Well, you sign something.
Oh, my God.
Have a prenup for your relationships? Well,
a pre-goodbye agreement.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Prenup.
Really? Yeah. Okay.
Well, in the end, Mike found out that it's much more fun to talk about it on the air, too.
Yeah, Casey, your mistake is not in still talking about your exes. It's in still talking to your exes.
What exes am I talking to?
Well, anyone that knows. Yeah, anyone that... If you know it's a problem, you're spending too much time talking to them.
No, this would be in cease and desist emails.
Well, there's a little device called Block on your Microsoft Outlook.
That did go on for days.
What do you mean?
The continually... You were caught up in it for a few days.
I did. Well, I returned the email, yeah.
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 So was that Cheater or Hula Boy? Which one got you?
we're not talking about him anymore.
Oh, okay, okay. Not saying a word. Okay.
Except Cheater. Cheater, never mind being talked about.
Cheater
is
moving. I've officially driven out of state every single ex-boyfriend of mine.
All right.
He's not moving because of you.
No,
he didn't even mind
not.
When you talked about him as a cheater.
No.
Is he going
care.
To Kansas City with your other ex-boyfriends? Because I know you're
no.
kind of, you know,
that's
corralling
the other
them
thing.
All
my ex-boyfriends are also in new, fabulous relationships. So they're getting hooked up to other people and moving as far away as possible. So
they're all rebounding.
Good for them. No, I think these are genuine. I'm happy for them. This is good.
She always puts her head in the air when she's sure everything is okay. I think it's just fine.
I'm trying to
What's
be okay.
guy? Falling where?
Okay. Anyway, I think it's a great birthday party. If you've got $10 million to spend, spend it. I'll bet there are some reasonably extravagant birthday parties in our audience. I'll bet someone hired Rail to play at their kid's birthday party. And we will open the phones for... We'll see what... Look, this is not Los Angeles, so this is not going to be impressive. But let's see if we can find the most extravagant birthday party in our audience. So we'll at least know what it is. And by the way, the person who threw it might not want to call. So this will be one of those rare occasions where I'll allow someone to call and tell on them.
Yeah. There are people in this area more extravagant than anybody in California can imagine.
Does anybody have a kid that went to a Bill Gates birthday party? Does anybody have a kid that went to a Paul Allen birthday party?
I know a kid that went to one of those. I don't want to say who, but I know one idea of a good party was to charter a jet to go see Cream when the only date they played in New York to buy up many of the best seats and take lots of his friends.
Kids?
No, big kids.
But
oh, his own
party.
Birthday party.
Yeah.
Who was it?
I'm not going to say. I wouldn't want to betray the trust.
No, it's okay. It was in the news.
Oh, was it? Okay.
Yeah.
Mr. Allen did that.
Yeah.
Paul Allen went to see Cream for his birthday.
I don't know if it
did
was
Did they
his
play
birthday.
Just for him?
No, they played
no.
in New York. The
it
only show
Madison
they
Square.
Ever played in the last 30 years. Yeah.
Right. I was hoping we'd start at Chuck E. Cheese and move up.
Sorry. I didn't mean to set the bar so high.
1-800-252-1025. Who's got the most extravagant birthday bat mitzvah, bar mitzvah, confirmation?
Yeah.
What are the other things?
Well,
baptism?
Wedding?
Do you want to throw a wedding?
No, I don't want to do wedding.
Yeah, because that's different.
Most expensive.
Yeah, because your birthday parties are yearly. You got to top last year.
Holiday parties? Do they count?
No. 1-800-252-1025.
For the Hispanic community has quinceañeras.
Quinceañeras?
To turn 15.
Yeah, it's big for a Mexican girl.
What
Hispanic
is that
girl. Quinceañeras?
Quinceañeras.
What do they do there?
They pack up your stuff and point you north. It's pretty cool.
Oh, I'm sorry I brought it up.
it's not what they do.
I'll set a different bar because I thought Emily's last birthday party was pretty extravagant my standards. I rented a swimming pool. Now, granted, it didn't cost a lot, but the bags I gave the kids were pretty spendy. I put a pair of goggles in each bag. These goggles were like $2 a piece. I mean, that's a...
What kind of goggles are we talking?
Swim goggles.
Oh, okay.
I bought 50 pair of swim goggles. I looked online, too. I ordered them from Pittsburgh because I could get the best deal.
Best things are made in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Pittsburgh is known for that.
Now the guy still emails me. He thinks I'm like a swim company or something. He wants to sell me 50 pairs of swim shorts now.
1-800-252-1025. We're looking for the most extravagant birthday party or bat mitzvah in our audience. Alan in Seattle.
Hey, how you doing?
All right.
I was in San Diego. I was doing some business with a guy. He's a defense contractor down in San Diego. And while I was down there, he told me, hey, you know, my daughter's having this big birthday party. Come down to it. So we went to the hall, and it was a Sweet 16 birthday party, and he had hired the B-52s as the house band.
Wow.
It was rocking. Place was crazy.
Defense contractor, huh?
That's the same thing. This is a defense contractor, too. You get the feeling a hammer really isn't worth
$800? Yes. Yes.
Thank you, Alan. Todd is in Everett. Todd?
Yes, I have a friend that his mom throws a pretty good party for, she owns two adult stores.
When you say adult
Dude,
store...
if this story ends and she went to jail for nailing the kids at the party...
No, it's an all-ages party, but it's a free bar and... Oh, just craziness happens there because people get drunk and she has the Las Vegas imitators and stuff like that. Over.
This is an adult birthday party.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. We're looking for kids. I didn't specify that, did I?
No.
1-800-252-1025. Nobody's going to call with their kid party now because they have to first fly people to New York.
Sorry.
You killed it, Joe.
Or bring on some Elvis porn star.
It can be smaller. Build-A-Bear is an extravagance in my world. Emily's convinced you can only take five, thank goodness. She goes, I think I want to do Build-A-Bear, but I know the law is you can only take five. We've convinced her it's against the law.
You told her that was a law?
Yeah, to invite more than five kids.
That's good.
Yeah.
Justin in Olympia, hello.
Hey, Bob. Yeah, we rented a ice skating rink and played something called Broomball in Seattle for about 6 hours, and everybody brought out a bunch of tequila, and you don't get any skates or anything, but... Everybody gets really drunk and just hits balls around.
Okay. Gets really drunk shouldn't be a part of the kids' birthday party.
Please wear helmets when you do that, by the way.
All right. Mike, see if you can find a good kids one. I think basically our people are cheap.
Yeah, well, the ones who have amassed massive fortunes don't seem to be, you know, throwing it at their kids. I mean, Alan doesn't have children, so of course he's going to take his buddies to New York. I don't know that Bill Gates cares about his own kids as much as the kids of Africa.
I think Bill Gates cares a lot about his kids, and that's why he probably doesn't do this sort of thing.
In other words, he's not spoiling them. I'll bet he is actually totally the opposite of this defense contractor guy. I'll bet his kids go down to the Millionaires Club and dish out slop. Shannon.
Hi.
Hi, Shannon.
Hi there. My grandson's first birthday, we had it at Hooters.
How old?
In Bellevue,
first
when he was one.
One.
Yeah, and we had all the family there and all of my daughter's and son-in-law's friends, and it was a great time. And all the Hooter girls took pictures with him and everything.
And that's when he can really most appreciate it. I mean,
somehow one doesn't seem inappropriate, whereas three would be inappropriate, and five would be very wrong.
Very wrong.
Thank you. Survivor contestant Gary Hogaboom knows a little bit about endurance and tough competition, having spent over 10 years as an NFL quarterback. But just as a trip to the Super Bowl eluded him during his long football career, the million-dollar grand prize that he was angling for slipped from his fingers. Is it Hogaboom?
Hogaboom.
I'm sorry. Were you familiar with this guy when he was playing?
Absolutely.
You would be, as a sportscaster.
Absolutely.
Last week, Gary found himself voted out of the contest after spending a month toiling in Guatemala. The good news? He did last long enough to earn a spot on the jury that ultimately chooses the winner on the number one reality show. Gary
Hogaboom.
Welcome to the Bob Rivers Show. Thanks. Hi, Gary.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Yourself?
I'm doing great, thank you.
Okay. So, wow. 10 years in the NFL. Let's go back to that.
I'm not that familiar. I'm a more of a baseball fan, but Spike is a big football fan. How did your career end, if you could tell us?
You know, I had shoulder and elbow problems, and I just lost strength, and I was sick of living on a machine trying to practice every day with my elbow and shoulder, so I knew after 11 years it was time to call it quits.
Were you, I'm like this, I'm like my dad. Were you smart with your money? Did you save? Did you invest?
I hope I did. Obviously you make some good deals and some bad deals, but right now I'm enjoying life and have four great kids and still with my same wife for 24 years. So, yeah.
That's mission accomplished, buddy.
That's it. It's, yep. That's what it's about, man. Yeah. The more important things in life, the family and everything and all that. And the life if you had a longer-term, big, huge success, that stuff can be tough on a family, can't it?
You know, there's no doubt. You really have to stay grounded with your family, and I think pro football is the best sport to be in as far as being close to your family because you don't travel as much as basketball and baseball and hockey. It's just a little more brutal, a little more short-lived.
And no guarantees, too. That's one of the toughest things about the NFL.
Yeah, there's no doubt. 3.5 years on an average for a player lifespan is not very long, It's just tough, but I loved every minute of it.
Cool. Do you still have a Ben Gay punch card, or did all your injuries heal completely?
No, I still have a bad elbow and a bad shoulder, but, it was well worth it. It was a great time.
As a former player, what do you think of the 21st century version of the NFL, of guys like Terrell Owens and the people that are making it almost an individual quest more than a team sport?
It is, in fact, these days, way about the celebration and the individual ego.
Yeah, I was never into that, and I don't like it. It's the ultimate team sport, and, guys like Terrell Owens are trying to make it a me thing, but, he's a great talent, but, team is bigger than me.
And you never did a rap video where you faked a drive-by or anything like that?
No, that wasn't part of me.
Boom, 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 hug, boom, boom, boom.
Would have been easy. A few years from now, I would love to see Terrell do what you did and go on Survivor, though. He would be great at something like that.
Well, you still have to work with a team, so, I don't know. He's definitely a physical. He's definitely a specimen.
Mm. Well, Joe's hit on more than he knows here, because I guarantee you, as Survivor, which is no doubt the cream de la creme of reality TV, it's the grandfather, the granddam of reality TV. They will do NFL Survivor. They will do Survivor. They'll take a major genre.
Sure, Survivor athlete,
exactly,
for example.
Exactly.
Where you take athletes.
Yeah, don't you think that's a great idea? Yeah.
I do, because actually with Survivor athlete, they're going to call Gary Hoogaboom back.
As a veteran.
No, I think that's a great idea, but, people would recognize who they're watching, and, the training tables that pro athletes have, they'd have to learn how to deal with starvation, that's for sure.
And you went in there not wanting to be recognized. You made up a different name and everything. Why did you not want to be known as Gary Hoogaboom, the NFL quarterback, as a contestant on Survivor?
I wanted to be judged by how I played the game, not what I did in the past and who I was or how much I made. And I believe to this day that if they would have known I was an NFL and a pro athlete, I would have been gone.
You're the first one gone. Absolutely,
yeah, and,
you would have been.
I had strict instructions from my family that if I was the first one voted off, don't come home. So I wasn't giving anybody anything to go on.
They would have actually looked at. They would have looked at like the, usually it's the older woman that gets voted off. They would have said, "We can pick her off anytime. Let's get this guy now before
guy's
he's a problem."
The biggest competition we have.
That's right, yeah, so I had to do it.
And with a name like Hoogaboom, you couldn't have said, "Oh, no, I'm Gary Hoogaboom, the insurance salesman." That was another Gary Hoogaboom, the quarterback.
That's right, there's no doubt.
Okay, what was the toughest part for a big, strong guy like you? What was the part that made you, feel like a little girl?
There's no doubt. The starvation and the dehydration. You were dizzy all the time. It broke you down mentally and emotionally, so you just can't train for something like that.
Do you think that Lydia, who's a local girl for us from Lakewood, Washington, and she's a fishmonger, she's a mom, but she's also a former Marine. She was more qualified than a former NFL quarterback to take on this kind of thing.
Yeah, I loved Lydia. Lydia maybe wasn't the most athletic person there, but she brought her skills of hard work, great attitude, and a great cook. She was amazing. And that's why she's still around.
Yep.
Gary,
yep.
Do you coach kids?
Yeah, I've been a volunteer high school coach for probably 10 years. The last couple years, I got out of it because I had some kids playing sports in college and I wanted to watch them. So I love being around kids.
And they probably love you. What are the life lessons that you try to teach when you're working with kids in sports?
Well, there's no doubt that you have to communicate. You have to respect yourself first, and then respect others. And it's all about choices, the choices you make in life. And there's good ones and bad ones, and you really got to be careful, in today's society, what you're doing.
If someone has real talent, really special talent, and wants to try and hit the bigs, maybe they're listening right now, what piece of advice would you give them?
Hard work, dedication, and you got to be a dreamer. If you don't follow your dreams, you'll never know if you can get there or not. Don't ever sell yourself short.
Gary Hogaboom in Grand Haven, Michigan. Very nice Survivor contestant. Congratulations on getting this far, Gary.
Thanks a lot. Have a great day.
He still interviews like a sports guy. They all have the same. They learn how to interview.
Oh God, yes.
Everything is about team, and good, positive, and
you always are aware that you could be taken out of context at any time.
Right.
As a pro athlete, you gotta give no matter what they do to your statement. You can't cut it up to get you in trouble. That's what T.O.'s never figured out.
Gary was a guy who, he was a great clipboard carrier in his day, too. He was kind of like Rick Meyer. He hung in the league a long time.
Most of them don't do anything that you couldn't do, Joe.
Yeah, until they're called upon.
Right. But a lot of times they're never called upon.
Right, right.
One of the things that all businesses study, focus group on, test, trademark, and value is a thing called a brand. You've heard me talk about brands every now and again. I'm a real fan, a student of marketing psychology and branding. Martha Stewart, it's just been announced, has one of the most hated brands in America. Before you think this is a bad thing, I'll explain to you why, in a way, it's not. Because Martha Stewart also has one of the most recognized brands. And for the people that like her brand, they obviously have made her a billionaires.
Right.
But they did a study in Adweek of which brands, and it's sort of like the way they test politicians. George Bush has strong negatives, but the people who love him will really basically leave the troops in Iraq for next 600 years and say it's going great.
Right, right. In for a dollar.
This is just what I talked to my right-wing friend the other day.
Yeah.
He said, I heard you on the air the other day. You're not losing the faith, are you? I said,
You were maligned one of the greatest presidents in our nation's history, were you?
I said, yeah, this is too long, too much. I'm not on his side now. I think we have to find a way to, do the best we can.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so Bush is a brand. He's a brand, and the people that hate him really hate him. I mean, they think he's Hitler, which is kind of ridiculous.
Well, you saw him go to Europe, and you saw him go to the Far East, and that's how they view him.
If he was Hitler, we'd have that whole Middle East. They would have theme parks by now.
Oh, dude. Oh, boy.
Seriously.
Oh, boy.
So having a hated brand, believe it or not, is not 100% negative if all you care about is making money, because Martha Stewart is a hated brand. Some of the other ones that came up as hated brands, Atkins.
Hated?
Atkins was the biggest fad a few years ago until Mr. Atkin slipped and fell. Died.
Dude, that's...
His wife took over the company and began licensing out the Atkins. They pretty much killed the low-carb craze, by the way. The low-carb craze was destroyed by American big food business when they started to try and come out with all kinds of processed low-carb foods. They basically decided better eating through chemicals. It was low carbs, high chemicals, right, Joe?
It was. And all the Atkins products you'll see in the store now are... they're in one of those grocery carts in the middle of the aisle, and they'll say discontinued 70% off.
Yeah.
It's all going away. Well,
and that's good, by the way.
Still fresh, though.
The truth of the matter is low carb was never what it was about. It was about whole foods and more protein and less refined carbs, less bread, less pasta. That still holds true, but the message never really got out.
Well, I don't see how Atkins became as hated as Martha Stewart. I mean, just because they flooded the market. Martha Stewart's hated because she's viewed as a criminal and as an absolute shrew.
Well, when you betray people, that's when you become a hated brand. When you do, you represent one thing for a while, and then you represent just
right.
the opposite.
It represented, tried to represent healthy.
Right.
And then it put out these chemical bars.
Okay.
Okay? And then those bars were such that, yes, they would curb your appetite for a little while, but they really tasted like horse hooey.
Curb.
And when you finally wanted food with taste, you quit eating the sawdust.
You went back to the cookies and candy, and who are you going to blame?
Mrs. Fields.
Atkins. He's yeah. flat on his back. He yeah. can't hurt you anymore.
Yeah.
New York-based consulting company called Genius Insight researched 1,079 American brands. The three most hated brands in America, I've given you two of them. Martha Stewart, Living Omnimedia, Atkins, and guess what else?
Hated.
Hated brand.
Donald Trump.
The National Enquirer.
Wow.
The most loved brands.
Jell-O.
Hershey's.
Close.
Hershey's. Yeah, well, yeah.
Hershey's.
Yeah.
M&M's,
mm-hmm.
Reese's, and Oreo.
There you go.
Oh, who amen.
As far as a kid, been there for you forever. Never let you down.
Who can dispute it?
Paul Jenkins, a partner at Genius Insight, says it makes sense that Atkins is dead just as last year, and all those candy and cookie brands are on top this time because dieting does not have positive connotations. Dieting itself is evil. Richard Simmons says that. He says the first three letters in diet are die. Dieting is all about sacrifice.
It is, yep.
It's not about eating right. And he says, what's not to like about candy? Well, while you're eating it, nothing.
And that's why
it's great.
Yeah, people yeah. love it.
For short term.
At the end of the day, it's a wonderful thing.
Mm-hmm.
The next day, on the scale, you're in denial about what caused your big weight gain.
And you hate yourself. Yeah.
The rest of the top 10 brands, these are the top 10 most beloved brands. Sony. There's still something about a Sony TV. My wife, when I met her, had a Sony TV. And to me, I have to say, even 25 years ago, I swear to God, it meant she had class. She's got a Sony.
You still have it? Because they hold on forever. It's like your wife. You slap it on the side a little bit. It's perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I won't love my Sony TV when it's 70. The second, let's see, the top, Hershey's, M&M's, Reese's, Oreo, Sony. The next brand, Kellogg's.
What's been around longer than Kellogg's? Corn Flakes. I mean, that's been with us for over 100 years, I know. It's consistent. It's always there. Just so as you seal it up, it'll taste good every time.
And even though Kellogg's really only makes a few good cereals, they've they have their Just Right, Good Start, Nice
yeah.
Way to Go. They have those kinds of cereals.
Attaboy. Tasty Bowl of Attaboy.
They have the, you know, they have the Harden Your Stool formula.
Oh, man.
But really, most of their products are relatively unhealthy. And then Kleenex
yeah.
is also in the top 10. Why Kleenex? Do you know that Kleenex itself is a brand name? It is not what you would call any other tissue, but for some reason Kleenex did such a good job with their commercials back in the 50s that when you pick up a nose tissue from anywhere, you call it a Kleenex, even if it isn't Kleenex.
Hand me a Kleenex, you bet.
Right. You don't go out in your Chevy and call it a Ford.
And nobody has anything negative to say about a Kleenex. I mean, what?
How can you say it didn't do its job?
Right. What possible negative connotation?
There's no way to screw it up.
Perfect.
Next up, Kraft. I hate Kraft. Kraft makes zesty Italian dressing.
Yeah, they screwed you over.
They screwed me over on the zesty Italian formula.
Really
I
yeah.
will
they
not
betrayed
buy.
You.
Huh?
They
betrayed my
you.
Trust. I
yeah.
will not buy anything Kraft ever again. All their processed cheeses and stuff. You
right.
can take those. And Well, I don't want to say.
But you loved
it's a family show.
You right. loved them for a
there
lot of
There will be
years.
Blockage with that much crap.
But you know where I'm thinking yeah. you should put the processed
right.
cheese. You know.
Right.
If you're over 18 or so, you have a picture. Nestle and Google. And that's amazing for Google to become one of the top 10 brands in the
wow.
world. In America, actually.
Overnight compared to the rest of the group, right?
Uh-huh. That's right. Hershey's, M&M's, Reese's, Oreo, Sony, Kellogg's, Kleenex, Kraft, Nestle.
Track records.
Google.
A year from now, I don't expect to see Google in the top 10.
Why?
Really? They're going to upset people. It's going to be for financial reasons. If the stock keeps going up, people are going to get upset that they didn't invest. If the stock crashes, then the people that did invest are going to be upset.
I would say you're...
I think Google is at the top of it.
You're assuming that this survey interviews stockholders. I don't think that the percentage of people who actually have Google stock would influence the top 10 brands in America.
But
at all.
The perception of the brand, I think, is...
You think that Google's going to in for a hard fall?
Well, I don't know. I think it's got to be at the top of its awareness darling of America phase right now, though.
I tell you what, they are the new Microsoft, and they're very vulnerable. Microsoft, for the first 10 years, acted like a scared company that had to protect itself and fight real hard because they were very vulnerable themselves. And that's the way Google's acting now. They could be the next Microsoft.
All Google's got to do is keep making you happy, give you what you want. Doesn't matter what their stock price does. I don't hate Google because I wasn't smart enough to buy the stock. And if I'm a ride in the stock market and it drops eventually, I knew that was coming. I'm not going to hate Google as long as I type in, you know, Springsteen 78 and they send me right to where I can buy the CD. As long as Google does what it says it will, like an Oreo cookie does what it says it will.
Right.
Splits open, it's all sweet in the middle. I'm a
player. In fact, Spike, frequently I see him type in Creamy Center when he wants to go someplace on the
right.
internet.
They send me to a cookie site. Sucks. But yeah, eventually Google hits you there.
The top 10 brands. Give them to you again. Hershey's, M&M's, Reese's, Oreo, Sony, Kellogg's, Kleenex, Kraft, Nestle, and Google.